our sacred name. Ooh. Our sacred name. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the instant inspiration entitled Our Sacred Name. Ellen received a phone call from a lady in Idaho this morning who is establishing a school for metaphysical school, because she was left a large metaphysical library, and she thought, for goodness sakes, why not put it to work? Very lovely thought. And so the reason she called was that her first name was misspelled. Now, most people wouldn't bother with the first name, they bother about the second name. But she bothered about the first name, which I thought was very noble. Most of the time, we don't appreciate who we are. We don't appreciate our names. Now, Ellen did her darndest to dump all of her names. Ellen had enough names to choke a horse. Say them.
Ellen Wilma Margareta Josefa Elizabeth.
Wilms.
Wilms Jamini.
Yeah. And now Wilms Jamini got unlimited University of Healing. So, you see, she had all those names. And so she went to the immigration authorities, and she said, I'm ready to become an American citizen. And they said, with that entourage? And Ellen says, well, I would like it just to be Ellen Jeremini. That's who I am, really. And the man said, sounds cool. And so she became Ellen Jeremini with just the flick of a pen, and she has never been the same again. And it's a lovely thing, because, you see, once you find out who you are and you act according to who you are, then you're wonderful. Now, I tell people, which is a fact, I tell people that they have chosen their names before they were born. And they've chosen their names because these names were indicative of what they would like to experience in this lifetime. And the names were sort of telling the story of who they think they are and who they think that they would like to be. And they do not take the names relative to what names are thought to be. They take the names relative to what they know them to be from within themselves. So each one of us knows our name quite differently than the world knows it. I told you the other day that if you want to, you can dream. And you can have sleep dreams and have all sorts of lovely dreams and tell us all about them the next day if you remember them. If you don't, you make them up, you know. But tell us all about the dreams that you had. And then tell us what you think those dreams mean. And so you tell us what you think those dreams mean. I say, oh, no. There's a book put out by so-and-so, and it's on dreams, and this is what your dream really means. I read the book, and I know what all the dreams mean. And so this is what the dream really means. Now, is that true?
No.
That was a quick answer. Why is that not true?
Because
somebody else's.
It's right.
Somebody else's interpretation of what our dream means or a dream means. Okay. Dodi, answer this question, and you will win the $54,000 response. Who determines what colors mean?
I do.
Excellent. Very well done. Very well done. Well, what about these doctors who say that blue, green, and yellow are very soothing and red is very irritating and so forth like that? Is that true?
Yes.
For them, yes.
Well, what about for you? Well, what about for you? Dodi? No. Dodi?
Yes.
Are you a gentle lady?
I believe so.
Are you a lady who goes around being a very sweet and loving person?
Oh, no.
Well, that didn't answer that question. Why do you have a red car? Because it represents your personality. And your personality is a dynamic, forceful, outgoing, sharing personality. Now, you cannot tell me, Dodi, that it just happened by chance that you got the red car. Nothing happens by chance. You know that. It was a very specific reason that it came to you, and that the color was important to you. It's a very specific reason. That's part of your world. You see? And those are things that we have to really consider. It's not something that's accidental. There's no accidents in this world. We like to think there are. Now, what does, and please don't answer me, but what does yellow mean? What does red mean? What does blue mean? What does green mean? What does orange mean? Now, what does a blending of these colors mean? What does a beige of each of the colors mean? What does a starkness of each color in its purest form mean? What does the sky mean with its light clouds rustling through it and the blue in the background, which is even a deeper blue as you go further out when you get away from the light crystals? Well, what forms the color in the sky? It's the dirt in the sky. The dust in the sky is what makes the sky blue. If the light didn't reflect off the dust, you wouldn't have a blue sky, really. And interesting enough, I use this illustration occasionally. The Egyptians, you know who the Egyptians were? The Pharaoh Egyptians, they did not have a word in their vocabulary for blue. I mean, of all the places that have a blue sky, Egypt sure has a blue sky. And the blue Nile reflecting the sky, and the other water areas, you know, and then the irrigation areas that reflected the sky too. They all were blue, but they had no word for blue. Hmm. Do you know that the Old Testament had no word for God? God was put in only later. I am that I am is the only term that they had for God. Hmm. You know? Now that sounds very strange and very unusual, but it's just the way it was. Mm-hmm. Because no one shall see God and live. No one can speak the name of the Holy One. Mm-hmm. Because this is what the Ark of the Covenant was all about. It was a secret place in which the name of God and the presence of God and the essence of God was maintained. If you want to read these things, it's fascinating. But you see, this is the colorful life that the ancient Hebrews had. This is the colorful life that other cultures have had. They make all these beautiful stories. They make all these beautiful events. Now, one of the greatest books ever written is a book of the Bible. What's the title of it? Do you know offhand? It's three letters. The book of Job. If you've never read the book of Job, you've never read one of the great thrillers of the Bible, the great thrillers of all time. I mean, it's outstanding. It's tough, but it's outstanding. But it also shows that one with integrity is not forgotten. For Job received all that he lost because he would not deny his awareness of the God within himself, of the divinity. Other people read it as the divinity outside of himself, but we read it as the divinity within himself. And you see, these things, there's nothing that happens by chance. These things were done as teaching tools. But such a magnificent book was written by a mind that was so pure and so magnificent and so one-pointed, you know. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And the stories of Jesus, I like to tell this story. I think I've said it before. I know I told a group of women this the other day. Jesus lived 2,000 years ago. And Jesus moved out of the picture shortly thereafter. And he was gone. And he was not around. He left so the Comforter could come. 50 to 75 years later, as a high school responsibility, four boys were chosen by their professor, by their teacher, by their rabbi, and told to write a story about the life of Jesus, to go back and research whatever they could pick up. And so each one of them went back and picked up what they could. Some of them couldn't pick up much, so they created some interesting concepts, you know. But some of them picked up what they could. And then they had these four lovely books, John, Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, you know. And beautiful books. And each was representative of the kid who wrote the book. Now, Herb, this is getting a little wild. But it's not so wild. And these, because you died at the age of 30 or less in those days, you know. So these four boys wrote these books. And they wrote them up as an examination for their rabbiship. And they turned it over to their rabbi council, who looked at it, and they said, hey, this is interesting, you know. This is interesting. You see, there's nothing against the Hebrew teachings in there. There's nothing against the Hebrew philosophy. There's nothing against anything. It's just that the Jews did cause him to be crucified. But there's no anger. There's no terribleness. It was just a silly thing that they had done. And so these boys wrote these theses and did a good job. And then the rabbis thought, hey, this is interesting. You know, this is the start of something interesting. And so they wrote these things up, and they put them down, and they polished them. They helped the boys polish them. And then they thought, well, now you should have some similarities in there. And so they blended the similarities, yet keeping the personality of the boys who wrote the books, you know. Obviously, there was no girls in those days. They didn't do scribe work, and they didn't do rabbi work. But they wrote these books. And then it was joined later with the writings of, what's that other guy's name? Saint Paul. Saint Paul. See, Paul went out because Peter said, Paul, I don't like you. I've got this side of the street, you take the other side of the Mediterranean. And so Peter took the Holy Lands, and he taught there. He was not a very effective teacher. He is not a very effective writer. He did not leave anything of consequence, except a lot of love. But Paul got kicked out of town, and he took the other side of the Mediterranean. And he did a very good job, remember? He went to all of these places, and he wrote beautiful books about it. He wrote beautiful stories about the teachings that he gave to these people. And he never even knew Jesus. He had no beans about Jesus. He had to listen intuitively. And just like the four fellows who wrote the four Gospels, they never knew Jesus. Now, they weren't even born then. You follow me? In fact, their parents died, and their parents' parents died during the time that these boys finally came along to write this work. Okay, yes, that's three generations. So when you consider this, it's not against the Bible. This is certainly not against anything. These are, if you wish to say, it's the Word of God, and it certainly is, because everyone is God, and everyone writes the Word of God, that's, and that's right. Lovely. And I mean, so why knock it? Why be silly about it? But be logical for your understanding. So the writings of Paul and the writings of these four fellows who gave a good foundation for the story of Jesus, it was a natural. Actually, if I may digress a moment, and I will take any moment I choose to digress, there were 24.
Yes.
There were 24 books of the story of the birth and life of Jesus. And of these 24, just the four were chosen by the various councils who went through them. The Nicene Council, the other councils that were studying these things in the early years of Christianity. And in the archives of the Vatican in Rome are many of the early books that were never used. They were read and found to be interesting, but these other books said the same thing, and so you didn't need to have redundancy. You got enough redundancy in the four books of the Gospel. And so these four books represented an educated person. They represented an intellectual person, an educated. They represented a person of a very deep emotional. They represented a very crass person, like you might be a tax collector type person. And they represented a person of just balanced logic, you know. Now, you can figure out who they were, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And so each one represented these various aspects of the nature that the Bible eventually has. And that's quite fascinating. Now, your name is very important. Your name is very important. What happened to Paul? Who had he been?
Saul.
And why did he change his name?
Because he had an illumination.
He had an illumination. He finished the work of Saul, and he moved on into the work of Paul. And
but wasn't that when Jesus lived?
No.
He changed his name from Saul to Paul on the road to Damascus when Jesus came to him in a vision after Jesus was gone.
Yeah, but so he met Jesus.
Yeah. He met Jesus, that's right. That's right. But he did not meet Jesus knowingly.
Okay.
He met Jesus as an impact in his life, as a vision.
Okay.
As an impact that had no personality to it.
All right.
He knew it was the man that he pursued.
Oh, okay.
He knew it was the man, because Jesus said to him, Paul,
why
persecutest thou me? You know?
Yeah.
Look it up. Did he say Paul or did he say Saul? Look it up. It'd be a good little test for you. But think of these things. Think of these things. They're very dramatic. Now, how do we know that Paul had this vision? He told us so. He wrote the book. He wrote the book. Now, you each one have visions. You each one have inspirations. You each one have imagination that takes you to the heights of glory, and you don't respect it because you think, oh, that's just my imagination. It's just something strange. You don't respect it as being something absolutely fantastic, and that's a shame, because within you is God, and God is working in you to shine forth his beauty. And that's why we say here our sacred name. Our name is sacred. And you have just dumped a whole bunch of names that you felt were too much bother to lug around. And a lot of us, we don't use our middle name. My middle name is Leonard, Herbert Leonard Byerly. And I use the L, but not, and I don't even use my first name. I say HLB, you know, HLB, line. Because to me, I know who I am, and I am who I am. And I don't need to prove it to anybody else in this entire universe, because I'm a very happy fellow. Now, your name is sacred, and your name is Ingeborg. It's not Inga. Your name is whatever else latches itself to it. But you see, you fall away from these things, like Dorothea here. She has this very lovely symphonic name, which has the beauty to it, and her middle name, oh my God. Do you know the book of Ruth in the Bible?
No, she was something.
She was a dynamic woman. And you just cast them aside and shorten your name to Dodie and shorten your name, no Ruth, you know. But you can't get rid of it, because that's your nature, that's your reality. And you don't have to go touting Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman, you know, which is your full name. But that's lovely. But you do respect it. And so long as you respect it, you're all right. Then you're really gaining the benefit from it in this world and in this life. So I share with you our sacred name. Our name is sacred. Now, if you like, from time to time, I'll weave in a few of these Bible stories for you and a few of these historical little stories, because it's like the lady on the phone yesterday. She says, my goodness, if I only knew the Bible that well. I said, you do. It's just that you don't use it. Mm-hmm. And we all know it. And all we have to do is read some of this Rocco, Arico Rocco, and
Roderico Orco. Rocco Derrico.
Rocco Derrico, and read his Aramaic translations of the words of Jesus and the words of the Bible, and we find that, hey, that was fascinating stuff. And they spoke quite differently. And we will spend some time doing that. But now we have reached the 20-minute level. And so until tomorrow, I will say to you, I love you with all my heart, my soul, and my being. Goodbye.